Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Right Now Weekly Radio Show, hosted by Vicki Winterton, founder of Expert Insights Publishing, home of best-selling books, award-winning magazines, global broadcasts and communities. Right Now is a highly educational, inspiring, and empowering show focused on writing, publishing, and marketing your books, featuring outstanding guests from across the globe, including best-selling authors, world stage speakers, thought leaders, and visionaries with proven strategies, secret formulas, and treasured resources to help you succeed and make an impact. Welcome, sit back, and enjoy the show. And now your host, Vicki Winterton.
Hi, this is Vicki Winterton, and I am thrilled today because with us we have a really special treat. We have Steve Haynes with us today. British-born Ivan Haynes first arrived in Hollywood in 1949 and moved there permanently in 1950. An actor for 10 years, he worked in movies at MGM, Warner Brothers, Paramount, Columbia, RKO, Universal Studios, and Samuel Golan Studios, as well as early network TV and radio. He's also just had an amazing life, and he is a prolific writer of wonderful books. Steve, welcome. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Vicki.
I wanted to have you just tell us a little bit about your amazing life in Hollywood, because you just knew everybody and did everything in the Hollywood scene. You're really a legend. So tell us a little bit about what that looked like for you.
Well, it started out really because I knew a young lady who was a ex-girlfriend of Errol Flynn's, and she, knowing I needed a place to stay, and that Errol was affable to letting people stay up there if they were friends of hers, she drove me up there. And Flynn and I got along very well. And he showed me the room, and he said, you know, you can stay here. It's over the garage. You can stay here, too. You've got a place of your own. And he said, some other people have stayed here. One of them was John Barrymore.
Oh, my gosh.
A little above my class. So he said, yeah, but, you know, he said, there's been a lot of people here. He said, I keep an open house. And he said, I'm more than happy to have you stay here. And once I was there, instead of meeting the average person, I met people that he knew. So, and that's the whole trick of it. If you know the president of the United States, the people you know will be the people that the president knows. You won't know them on the whole, you know, by yourself, you won't know anyone. And the people you know will be your level of person. I now, by fluke, leapt into the upper echelon. And literally from there, I met people, you know, I mean, the Ava Gardners and the Clark Gables that I never would have met except if I was, you know, if I was on a movie with them. So, you know, that set me off into a realm that I would not have, I mean, within a few weeks. And, this, you know, people were telling me in England, you can't leave home. You'll be another waiter. That's all you'll be. And I said, no, I'm going to be famous.
So I love it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I left home with $30 and no one over here that I knew. And I managed to survive very well. And people, and I will have to tell you this, Vicki, people have been enormously good to me throughout my life. Men that had no reason, like the Bob Middletons, the Don Staleys, they were just inordinately good to me and helped me out. And even Flynn, you know, I mean, he helped me out immensely. And then there were women that were, for whatever reason, there was something about me, and I, you know, if I knew what it was, I'd bottle it and become rich. But there was something about me that people said, oh, yeah, he's a good guy. Let's keep him around. And so, I mean, you know, whenever I dated Ava Gardner, I can assure you of one certain thing. I never paid because the places that she wanted to go were outrageous. You know, the nightclubs along the Sunset Strip, Ciro's, Macombo. I couldn't even afford. I was a parking lot boy. And so, you know, they all seemed to be content to have me around, and I was happy to be around.
Oh my gosh, what an incredible life you've had, as I mentioned when we first started. So can you share with us just a few of your favorite moments in Hollywood?
You know, I mean, I idolized as a boy, you know, in the 40s when I was growing up in the war, I idolized Errol Flynn. And I always left home thinking I would be, you know, I was tall, good looking, and I'm not bragging, but I was very good looking. And I had an English accent, and I thought, well, I'm going to be the next Robin Hood, the next Errol Flynn. And so with that naive belief, it was an incredible coincidence that within 3 or 4 weeks, I was living at his house. I mean, that doesn't happen, you know.
That is amazing.
And then, really. I mean, another fluke thing that continued to bring me into the limelight, there was a place in 1949, it opened and it stayed opened all throughout the 50s and early 60s called Googies. And that's G-O-O-G-I-E-S. And it was a coffee shop. And it was the adjacent to a very famous place called Schwab's Drugstore. And everybody who was anybody, literally anybody, used to get their prescriptions at Schwab's Drugstore. So, you know, you'd see Burt Lancaster come in and pick up his pills. So by being in Googies, I got to know more people. And then when I became night manager, which again, they needed a manager, I knew someone who told me they need a manager, a night manager. He said, look, you'll be fabulous. You know a lot of stars. Stars come in there. He said, you're charming, you're English. This will be great. Come on, come and work for, you know, for me. And that was Ed Thatcher. And so the only thing I have to say is this. In order to have a fascinating life, you cannot hole out in your house or, you know, in a know-nothing town and stay there all your life. You may be very happy, have 3 wonderful children and a wife who adores you, but you won't meet Clark Gable. You've got to put yourself out. It's like me when I left home. I came to Hollywood. That's why I put myself out there and took a chance. So I really do believe that when you hear about people who have gone on to be successful, they're usually pretty single-minded. They've got they're willing to sacrifice a lot to get what they want. And they also put themselves out there. And, you know, I mean, as I say, when my first role as an actor, and I wasn't, let me state one thing. I'd never done an acting job in my life, ever. My father was an actor. He was with D.W. Griffin, the 20s, but I wasn't an actor. When my friend said, look, I'm going out to Fox. It wouldn't hurt you to come out with me. I'll introduce you to the casting director, George Light. In those days, that was still with the studio system when they had all the stars and, you know, the Ty Powers, who was a buddy of mine, he was under contract there. Clifton Webb, you know, people who were big were under contract. And so I went out there with him. And he was going for a job. I wasn't going for a job. Now, this is fact, okay, literally fact. I was going out there, oh, my goodness, I'm going to a studio. And we drove in. We went into the casting office, which at that time was right next to the ad building. And he introduced me to George Light, nice little guy. And George looked at me, and he looked at me, and he said, go sit over there, you know, with those other fellows. Go sit over there. And I thought, gee, I don't know what he's got. You know, I don't know why I'm being thrust way out in the corner, but okay. And I went and sat, and there were about 4 other guys who were somewhat looked like me. And I waited, and then every now and then someone would come out of the inner office door and say, you're next, you're next, until it got down to me. And when it got down to me, the last guy came and said, well, your turn. And I looked at George, he said, go ahead. I went up there, and I went up to a second floor. I walked into an office. There was the producer, the director, and the writer. I didn't say a word, Vicky. I did not say a word. I walked in there, and the producer said, hey, that's him. And the writer said, my God, yeah, that is him. And the third guy, the director, said, tell George downstairs you've got the job. Now, I swear to you. And I said, yes, okay. So I go back down to the theater, George, and I say, George, I don't know what the hell's going on, but they said you got the job. And he said, I thought you would because you look just like him. And I said, just like who? And he said, well, they're looking for someone who's around 18 or 19 who looks like a very young boy when he's graduating from school, because the opening of the movie, Steve, is when you're all graduated, and then it's a flashback. It's called Bells on Their Toes. It was Myrna Loy and Clifton Webb. And he said, so anyway, you got the job. Great. And he said, they didn't mind your British accent. And I said to George, which is not a lie, I said, they didn't seem to. No, I didn't say a damn word. And he said, well, that's great. As long as they don't care, I don't care. And cut to the movie, it was about a week later after wardrobe, and I had like five or six lines. We were in this graduation in front of this real school. And my lines were, oh, hi, the middle of it was my mother. Oh, hi, Mom. I didn't know you were going to be late. Where have you been? And then we had a few words. So Myrna Loy comes and sits behind me, and the cameras are rolling. And I say, oh, hello, mother. About as British as you can be. And the guy screams, cut! And I said, what's wrong? I gave you the. He said, you're British. And I said, yes. And he said, how the hell did I get a British guy? So they cut my lines to, like, it ended up with, oh, hi, Mom. That was it. But, I mean, the idea was that if I had spoken, I wouldn't have got the job.
Oh, wow. That's
and
incredible.
So all I'm saying is you can be talented. You can be all these things. You need a little luck.
Yeah. Well, tell me something that I don't think has come from luck, because you've been a very prolific writer and you've had a number of really wonderful books. How did writing come into your life?
Okay. When I was in Googies as a night manager from 49 to 59, I was an actor, but I really didn't like it. And around 56 or 7, 57, I thought, I've got to get out of here. And I went to Alaska to look for gold. And while I was in Alaska, I had an idea for a story. Now, I wasn't a writer, but I'm thinking, what am I going to do? I guess I'm going to end up being a maitre d' in some swanky, like, Zeros. Because that's all I knew. So I thought, well, I'll go to Alaska, maybe I'll find gold. Now, you know, that sounds stupid, but, you know, you're 18, 19, that's what you do. And so while I was up there, I thought of this story. When I came back, I ran into an old actor friend of mine, Leo Gordon, who played Heavies, and I told him the story. He had just sold a script. It was called something like The Telephone, The Boy and the Telephone, something like that, just a B-movie. And he said, look, I like that idea. He said, if you want to collaborate, I got an agent, we can sell this. And I said, well, you know, he said, but how do you know about Westerns? You're English. And I said, well, I like Westerns. And we wrote the script together in about 2 weeks and sold it, and it was called Escort West with Victor Mature. And literally, that's how easy it was.
My gosh.
I now was in the Guild, which is very hard to get in. I was now an established writer. So when that happened, I got a little egotistical and thought, well, as usual, things are just dropping in my lap. You know, well, I guess I'll go home and write the Nobel Prize book. And so I went up and I got this place in Laurel Canyon, which was a little kind of a hippie area, and I started writing. And then I heard about the Castro Revolution. And I thought, now that would be, I could write a For Whom the Bell Tolls by Hemingway. I could write one of those. If, you know, if I go lead, Castro and I lead the troops into Havana, you've got to realize you're dealing with a very immature man, and so, imaginative man. And so I flew to Cuba, which was then you could, and I then went down. I actually stopped and saw Hemingway. I knew Hemingway vaguely. I'd met him once. And I stopped and banged on his front door, on his gate. And the gardener went and got him. And Hemingway came out, didn't recognize me at all, didn't want to talk to me. I said, well, you know, I know you, and I've come all this way just to see you. And, you know, I lied through my teeth. And anyway, he invited me in, and Miss Mary, his wife, was leaving. And she said, well, I put out the lunch. And she said, will you stay for lunch to me? And I said, yeah, you bet. And so I was spent that afternoon with Hemingway.
My gosh.
And it was Hemingway who said to me, well, what do you do? And I said, I'm a writer. You know, anybody can say it. And he said, well, have you sold anything? I said, yes, I've just sold a screenplay. And he got very indignant. And, that's garbage. Screenwriter, you've got to write a novel. And I said, okay. What's, you know, but why? What? And he said, well, you know, let me tell you, you can't ever get to be a famous writer if you're just going to write screenplays. Well, that's baloney, because Bill Goldman is every bit as famous as anybody. And so I went home, and for there's where your single-mindedness, I went home and for 11 years wrote and didn't sell another thing. And I kept myself afloat by working odd jobs. And I honestly, I'd left school at 14, not quite 15, 14 and a half, and I had no, I didn't know what grammar was, I didn't know anything. So a lot of those years were a guy named Herb Nichols became a mentor for me, who was a writer who wrote for Saturday Evening Post. Another, an actor friend of mine, Bob Middleton, supported me. He gave me $50 a month, and that paid for the rent of this one room where I was. It was actually a porch, a walled-in porch in Laurel Canyon, where this woman had this house and needed extra money. So she walled in the porch and rented it out as a room. And the guy that was living there before me was an actor called Fess Parker.
Oh, my gosh.
And I knew Fess from Walt Disney days. And he said, I'm getting out of there. I'm going to be famous. I'm doing, what was it, Daniel Boone or something, whatever, Davy Crockett. And he said, I'm not living here anymore. Come on up here, $50. And so Bob gave me, he was a wealthy man, famous actor, and he said, I'll give you 50, I'll pay for the rent, you've got to find the rest of it. And so literally, you know, sometimes I would get a bowl of water and throw ketchup in there and have tomato soup.
Wow, incredible, really incredible. So what were some of the greatest lessons, life lessons, that you felt you learned that maybe, you know, you look back on and say that,
well,
you know, that was really important?
One thing I learned, and I learned it as a boy 8 years old to 12 years old. I grew up in a place called Richmond, which is Greater London. And I grew up during World War II while we were being bombed. And I learned very bitterly that you can't run away from death. Okay, now I'm not being dramatic. You ask me something, I'm answering it. There's a saying, you know, if the bullet has your name on it, you're dead. And I learned, because the little girl that lived next door to me and who I was wild about, you know, we were both about 9 or 10, her mother couldn't have any more children. And so Jennifer, the girl, they decided they couldn't risk living there anymore, because nightly, you know, houses on my street would disappear. And so basically they just moved to a place called Kent. This is in England, what we over here call the country. And so they moved away. Well, the irony is that her house, when the last time I went back to England, which is like, I don't know, 30 years ago, their house is still standing. And they lasted throughout the war down in Kent. And at the end of the war, when the bombing stopped, and I don't expect you to remember that at your age, but at the end of the war, Hitler, in a crazy attempt to, as a last-ditch effort, started sending over randomly what they were calling flying bombs. And all they were was a bomb with a propeller that lasted, so, you know, flew over, reached England, and crashed and exploded. And the second one that landed in England landed on their house and killed Jennifer. All I knew is, from then on, I didn't have a worry in the world. That if I went to Cuba and fought in the revolution, or I went to the Belgian Congo and fought in the revolution, if I was going to die, I wouldn't necessarily die there. I would die on the plane over. I would die as I got up out of the bathtub. You know, I realized it. And it's been an important thing, because it made me less inhibited than I already was. I have felt, if you add that to various things, I mean, it was kind of ballsy to bang on the front gate of Ernest Hemingway, but I looked at it again, like, what could he do? He can't kill me. And so that's, you know, I guess that philosophy is one of the philosophies that have stead me throughout my life. And I would say the other one is, that literally, if you have integrity, you don't have any worries in the world. Because if you have integrity, stop and think of the things you can't do. You can't be cheating on your wife. You can't be lying. You can't be stealing, because that doesn't have integrity attached to it.
Yeah.
In one word, you can pretty much sum up a man's character. And I try to write those characters, incidentally. They're corny, perhaps, but I try to make, and that's why I like Westerns. Westerns, you've got black hats and you've got white hats. And you seldom have in-betweens. Now, that limits Westerns, and they may not win you any Nobel Prize, as you know, where you might write a great book. I mean, To Kill a Mockingbird is a great book. But there is black, white, and gray. But in Westerns, it's pretty much black and white. And I like leading my life black and white. You know, I like to know really and truly the good guys from the bad guys.
Yeah, and really living your life as a good guy according to your standards.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I'd say to you, I'm 85, so I know what I'm talking about. The bottom line is, look how I've been protected throughout my life. And look at the things. I mean, I've been in places, as I say, I fought in the Belgian Congo, I fought in Cuba. You know, I went through the war, not like my brothers, who were older and went and fought. But, I mean, I was where the bombing was, where literally we would go to school, and three or four times a day we'd run to the shelters and have the class do our lessons in the shelters. And then every day there was an empty desk in your classroom, and instead of thinking Johnny's sick with a cold, you knew Johnny was dead. And when you went home, you went by Johnny's house that you might have had tea, you know, being British, you went and had tea 3 or 4 days ago. It was now a pile of rubble. And so you learn, whether someone is an atheist or whether they're very religious, I think you should learn that you better lead your life as good as you can. Try not to hurt people. You know, that doesn't mean to say you won't screw up. I mean, you know, I've had a lot of marriages. They were all wonderful women, but we, you know, we just eventually said, you know, this isn't working out. So it doesn't mean to say you won't occasionally do something wrong, but don't set out to rob the lady at the corner. Don't do that. And when I write, I try to bring that to, like, even my television, when all the years I wrote television, you would tell a story and you would try to say, listen, these are the guys and this is the character arc. And if they didn't want to follow that, I pretty much didn't write for them. There were some shows I wouldn't write for, and I could have used the money. And I think it boils down, you know, even in my early, early years when I first came here, it's pretty hard for you to understand what Hollywood was like. But that real business of, like, you know, the Marilyn Monroe on the casting couch, and it was pretty much like that. And so you either had to lead your life a decent way, whether you were getting the breaks or not, or you just said, look, I am so single-minded that I don't care if I have to go out and have sex. I don't care. If it will get me what I want, that's what I want. And so, I mean, I knew Marilyn Monroe very well. I used to drive her home, and my ex-wife, then wife, I should say, she was a friend, too, because of Googies. Marilyn, for a while, lived behind Googies, and then she moved on to Doheny, which is a big street. And I used to drive her home when she was dodging Frank Sinatra and Joe DiMaggio. They'd be looking for her, and I'd sneak her home. So, I mean, I knew her very well. And she wasn't a, she was a bit of a, you know, a little flaky, but she was a nice person. I liked her. She had good qualities, but she had decided that I will go all out. It doesn't matter what I have to do. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And that was her choice, you know.
So fascinating, fascinating. So I know people are going to want to delve more into the history, the rich history that you have, in addition to your books, which are available on your website. Can you direct everyone there so that they can get in touch with you and be able to tap
well,
into more of this?
I have a website, and the website is Steve, S-T-E-V-E, and then it's one word, Steve Hayes, H-A-Y-E-S. So it's one word, Steve Hayes, and then it's .org, O-R-G. And now practically everybody nowadays has a computer. And you can get to the website and learn all about myself. All the books are there. Plus the fact Amazon carries all my books and carries my... I have a writer friend of mine who sometimes we collaborate. And his name is David Whitehead. And he lives in England. I've never met him. He's a recluse. But we talk on the phone all the time. But he made up a website for me, and that's that. Or you can also go to Kindle, and every book I've got is on Kindle.
Oh, that's wonderful. Steve, thank you so much for living such a full life that we all enjoy hearing about, and then really contributing your stories, fiction, nonfiction, children's books, all of this, you know, it's a legacy. And I feel that everyone needs to tell their story and the stories that are in them, because no one else can do it like each individual can. And you have done it bigger and better than most people. Just such a prolific body of work. And I just want to thank you for your contribution
well,
and also for
Vicki,
being with
nice
us today.
Well, Vicki, it was nice of you to invite me on the show. And if you ever need me to come on again and continue and tell you anything else that you want to know, I'd be more than happy to do that.
I would love that,
you know,
Steve.
I'd be happy to. I'd sometimes do that for other people. So you just let me know, and I will be more than happy to oblige.
Fabulous. So again, Steve's website is Steve Hayes, S-T-E-V-E-H-A-Y-E-S .org. Okay,
yeah.
Steve, thank you so much once again, and thank everyone for being here and listening in. And if you'd like to learn more about Expert Insights Publishing, our best-selling books, award-winning magazines, our global broadcast and communities, you can find us at getei.com. That's G-E-T-E-I.com. And everyone have a wonderful week.